stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Zach's stock strategist, Brian Bolin, who is also editor of the Game Changers portfolio and Stocks Under 10. And we're going to discuss a topic that has been in the news a lot the last couple of days, and I know it's of interest to both Brian and myself, and that is Warren Buffett. He held the annual Berkshire meeting in Omaha, the big pilgrimage when everyone goes to the heartland from the coast, and gets to see him and Charlie Munger up on the stage for hours answering questions.
The exalted lords that they are.
That's right. Warren is now 85. I don't know how old Charlie is.
He's 380.
Yeah, he's about 90, I think. And then they were on CNBC for several hours the next day. They always do that afterwards. Yes, several hours with Bill Gates. They have to bring him on, maybe to spice it up.
What was Becky wearing?
She the normal.
Okay,
she had black with the skirt. Yeah. Becky's always there. Becky Quick from CNBC. And I did watch some of that. I didn't attend the Berkshire Hathaway meeting. I'm not a shareholder. I used to be, but I sold those shares years ago because they were going nowhere. Yeah.
Right. Oh.
Although I did look it up lately and just out of curiosity to see how well they've been doing. And the B shares, which is what the lowlier people can afford.
The plebes.
Right. Those are up 81% over the last 5 years. Comparing to the S&P 500, which is up 53.9. So they are beating the S&P these days. But you get no dividend there.
No divvy.
Oh, that always annoyed me.
I think that's kind of the thing, you know. I don't want to jump the gun on everything that we're going to talk about here. But I think that's like the whole strategy that Mr. Buffett would need. And the thing that he gives to everybody that makes it available for the common person, that $1,000 price,
right,
you know, share thing, has no dividend, is the absolute thing that built him, but no, not for you.
Well, yeah, that's the interesting thing. On the parts I did see them discussing, of course, they talked about their holdings, which are, you know, IBM, Wells Fargo, American Express, he's held for like 30 or 40 years, Coca-Cola. They all pay dividends, and they were talking about IBM. Oh, it's got that dividend. It's now 3.7% yield. Great. You know, that's what I'm getting for owning Berkshire. I'm getting this, you know, these big cap, slow growth. I looked up IBM's, you know, earnings expected to decline 9% this year and up only 3% next year. They kept going on about, oh, the dividend. And for Buffett, who bought some of these, like I said, 30 or 40 years ago, he's getting a big dividend yield off of that, those original purchases.
Right.
But I know everybody listens to Mr. Buffett and to some extent, Mr. Munger. I have in the past. I've, you know, read articles. I've read books about Warren Buffett and his investing strategies, which I still...
Oh, gee shucks.
I know. I still like some of what he says about the long-term investment. But his actual investing picks now, I don't think anyone should be listening to, you know, I don't think I should be running out and buying IBM or American Express.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go ahead and launch it right here.
Okay.
Tracy, I've been waiting for some time, for so many years, but Warren Buffett has been the scourge of the investment world for so many people for decades.
I know.
You know, I mean, it's an absolute con job that the American public has just bought in hook, line, sinker, rod, reel, boat, the whole lake. They've bought the whole thing. You know, what everyone has done is say, let's act and have Warren Buffett be our role model. But the fact is that, you know, Warren, you know, did it in a different time. And what he did, you know, over his time, he did great.
Right.
Okay. And I'm not taking away from the success that he had, but
right,
you can't model yourself to do what he did today. The one thing that has been constant in the stock market for the last, you know, 100 years is constant change. So the things that work for him will not likely work for you. And, you know, his whole philosophy of, you know, buy and hold forever,
right,
you know, I think we've summarily dismissed that as something that just can't happen over the last, you know, even 8 years. You can't buy and hold forever and expect that these names, you know, of today are going to be around even 15 or 20 years later. I mean, it's just highly unlikely. The thing is, it worked for him in his time, And I'll go into some of the even more negative feelings that I have for him. But you can't model yourself after Warren Buffett, thinking like, okay, this guy just knows everything, because at one time he did really well, and great for that. But that one time is now over. And, you know, reaching that, taking that philosophy and extending it through to present day just does not work.
I feel like we should be modeling him as he was in like the 70s, and the type of companies he bought them, because Berkshire was much smaller. When he has less to invest, he's able to buy the smaller, more nimble companies. He doesn't have to buy these, you know, really large cap, old, whatever. Because it's so much smaller. So I do feel like I can take some of what his philosophy is from back then and apply it to today, but not follow his philosophy from today.
Right. Okay. So that's...
that makes any sense.
I know. I get you with that. But here's one thing. So I just want to... Like, I made a few notes here. This fits in perfect here, because over the weekend, Mr. Buffett had tough words for Mr. Michael Pearson, who was the CEO of Valiant, you know, VRX.
Yes,
and, you know, that stock was, you know, $277, and now it's, you know, it was down to 27 recently. So, you know, 90% haircut there.
Yeah.
Normally haircuts aren't as big as 90%, but I mean, that's very hard. But let's take a look at, you know, Berkshire versus VRX. I mean, they're both essentially the same thing. They're roll-ups. You know, they're buying businesses. That's what they do.
Big
that's how, you know, they're just... Valiant's buying up all the biotechs and healthcare companies, you know, all these things. And the idea of a roll-up works great as long as it's working. And for that to happen, the stock has to keep going up and earnings have to continue. You continue to use your stock as your currency, that sort of thing. And that's great when it works. And it's been working for Berkshire. If you think about the businesses they have, you know, the Geico, the insurance.
Sure. See's Candy.
Yes.
Dairy Queen.
Well, See's Candy and Dairy Queen, a little smaller. But think about the railroads.
Right.
They bought utilities.
Huge railroad.
You know, these businesses are, he's just rolling these all up into one big pile. And
that's
it's
right.
like, you know, and I get the idea of the vertical integration between, you know, the railroads and the utilities and, you know, a little bit on the insurance side and things like that. But, and there's opportunities in and around there and the other items that they hold. But at the end of the day, it's a roll up.
It is.
And just because Berkshire
had. That's why I sold it.
Yeah. Just because Valiant, you know, had pricing power and they, you know, really squeezed everything and they possibly pushed everything higher in terms of prices and really made a lot of money doing that in a very short amount of time, doesn't mean that, you know, that their roll-up is bad and your roll-up is good.
Right.
You know, so when we're talking about like the acquisitions that a young Buffett would make and you look at it today, you know, wasn't Michael Pearson basically a young Buffett? He's just buying big names. He's buying billion-dollar companies. You know, if you just bring it, dial it down to buy, you know, buy the $200 million companies instead, you're doing the exact same thing. And I guess my idea here, my point in general, is that you can't do the Warren Buffett strategy, because it worked for him at the time. It did, but now it doesn't work like that anymore.
Okay.
You know, you don't see Facebook and let's call, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, you know, one of the great investors, if you will, of the time. You know, you don't see him just constantly out there buying big, huge monster names. I mean, you did buy the Instagram and you did buy the WhatsApp, but, you know, we haven't heard anything of a mega huge acquisition from them in a long time. So it's not necessarily all about the roll-up, all about buying and slapping pieces, parts on to make something better.
What do you think about when Buffett's always asked at these meetings and on these interviews about his views on the economy in general? Do you think he has any idea, like, about what's happening out there? Because I bring this up because a lot of people were quoting over the weekend. He got asked about the housing market because Berkshire does own some home builders and things like that. And he said, quote, "I don't see a nationwide bubble in real estate at all," unquote. But in 2010, I looked this up because I wondered what he thought about the last bubble we had. Did he call that one?
Right.
Did he see it at all? And I looked it up, and he actually gave testimony before the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission in New York City. This was in June 2010, about the bubbles because of his investments in Wells Fargo and all of that. And he basically missed the housing bubble the last time. And he said, quote, "I didn't think home prices could pop like they did," unquote. And then he also admitted that he basically not missed, but miscalled the internet bubble of the 1990s, saying that it went further along than he thought it would. So I'm reading all this going, why are we listening to him talk about how there's no bubble at all nationwide about the housing market? Why is this the big headline when he's never gotten that thing right ever?
Yeah, you know, you can give him a little bit of credit for being, you know, sticking with it, sticking in the market for as long as he has and holding these investments for a very long time. The buy and hold part, you know, of that philosophy, the hardest part of buy and hold is holding.
That's right.
You know, because you want to take those gains. You want to go after something sexy and beat your number from the other year. But if you just hold on for decades,
right.
Because, I mean, let's face it, that is his
philosophy.
A lot of people do have decades left to live. It's just a lot of people don't use decades in their time horizon for their investments.
Right.
You know, if you did that.
Should we all?
Yes and no.
Okay.
You know, to some degree, obviously, in your large cap ideas, maybe decades, you know, are the things that work. But in the smaller cap, the things that you, you know, want to see good explosive growth in the near term, you know, certainly not.
Yeah.
You know, will Facebook be around for decades? I don't know. Will Twitter be around for decades? You know, we're hitting, you know, all-time lows right here. It is something that we thought was destined for greatness.
Right.
You know, totally wrong. So who knows what the right thing is? Only hindsight tells you.
He tends to like companies that have like really strong brands, consumer oriented, things that he does believe will be around for decades,
right.
Like the Dairy Queens of the world. They are still here. Do you see any, you know, companies now that, you know, investors who don't really want to follow what Warren's doing with the IBMs of the world, but kind of want to follow that other philosophy of his about picking the brands or are, is there anything on your horizon that would kind of fit in there?
I'm against Warren Buffett in almost everything that he does.
Okay, so you don't even follow that philosophy.
Yeah, the only thing that I agree with Warren Buffett is breathe oxygen. And other than that, I think everything that he does is wrong and evil.
Okay.
I'm a little thinking maybe a little bit of a hyperbole there. But
so you will not be attending.
Yeah.
You will not be watching the Omaha meetings?
Because no.
I think they live. Yeah. Had it on live this time, live streaming.
Yeah, I won't ever watch it. You know, him and him talking of the weapons of financial mass destruction.
Yeah.
You know, and it was 100% a case of don't you use this and don't you do that. But, it, you know, in behind the scenes, he's doing all of that and using all of that, you know. So it's the old, you know, do as I say, don't do as I do. And then I don't even want to get into this maybe for another day, the podcast for Warren, but, you know, him in the the mobile homes business.
Right.
You know, which is just the most financial predatory thing in the world. And that is basically all him, you know, and almost nobody else. So and you know, from soup to nuts, you know, from the home manufacturing to the loans to the insurance to every aspect of it, he has his filthy fingers in that pie. And you know, I know that the American dream has been bought and sold to everybody for a very long time. You have to own, but the mobile home industry is just an absolute, you know, tar pit of destruction of wealth for everybody except for Warren Buffett, who has made
the manufacturers,
you know, untold billions from that.
Okay.
So I everything that he's about, I'm against. That said, you know, I understand the power of dividends over decades.
You know?
So if you have the decade time horizon and you want that large cap name, you know, go with the dividend payers. You know, the things that Johnson & Johnson is definitely not going to go away over the next 20 years.
Right.
You know, I don't know what dividend they pay. I'm sure that they pay
that's
a minor one.
Yeah.
Reinvest those dividends. And over a 20-year time horizon, I would imagine you're going to be just fine. You know, if you have 20 years.
Yeah, I saw
a tweet, time horizon to get your money out to be able to retire on.
Yeah, I saw a tweet that said, and I don't know if this is accurate, but it sounded pretty good to me, that because he's owned American Express so long, that original dividend is now returning something like 400% or something because he bought it at like 30 cents a share way back in the 70s.
So when you've made all this money on your money, it doesn't make sense to even sell it at that point.
Right.
And then it's what else would you do would give you what kind of return? As compared to what you have. And when you have that multi-decade philosophy, that can work. But again, you get into that hard part of that equation. The holding is the hardest part of buy and hold.
That's right.
You know, other stuff, you know, if you were anti-Warren Buffett, you would look at these companies that are doing the disintermediation, you know, these things that are breaking down the brands, the things that are destroying the financials. You know, we saw
the game changer type
philosophy. You know, we're going to shake up the world here, and this is going to be a lot different.
So would that be like the, because he likes the banks and the big financials, so that would be like maybe these little lending companies? Do you have any picks in there?
One of them blew up today for the most part. On Deck Capital, ONDC, is down some 35%. After doing earnings, Lending Club is one that's in that same vein. I'm more negative on that one now, just because that whole specter is going to be painted with a broad brush right here off of the ONDC.
Something to keep on the radar.
Yeah. Something to keep investors on the radar down the road, but just the idea, the disintermediation that's happening, you know, is Uber the type of thing that Warren Buffett would invest in? And, you know, most likely not.
No.
You know, because it's a small service and it's worldwide and it's little tiny little bits, but that's the type of thing that excites me. You know, I like the Uber. I like that idea.
I did see questions asked of him and Charlie Munger about the autonomous car because they own Geico and the big car insurance. Mm-hmm. But if we have self-driving cars, you know, you might not need car insurance at that point.
Right.
So what does that mean? And Charlie Munger had kind of a response to that. He said, you know, they're okay with owning some of the companies that might be disrupted, I guess is the word you would use, because it will take years to disrupt. But in their earlier years, they used to own an encyclopedia company that made a ton of money for them. This is like way back in the day. And then Bill Gates, when Microsoft came out, they offered that free encyclopedia on their software. I don't know if you remember that. Like you could click on it. It was before the internet, really, but it was embedded
the
in there.
Sure,
yeah, exactly. And that basically started the crushing of the encyclopedia business, and then the internet really crushed it down. So he used that as an example. See, we survived that. But he didn't really give any kind of, you know, Geico's a little bit different than a smaller.
Did they really survive that?
I think he said it was like $50 million business. Like Geico is huge.
Right.
So there is no real answer about what happens if insurance companies. So there is still a danger to some of these businesses.
And clearly, you know, does Charlie Munger fully understand the adoption rate that people are going to have on these things and the demand consumers are going to have at one point for these self-driving vehicles?
Right.
I mean, I know that makes these super long trips, you know, incredibly worthwhile. Like, say if I'm driving from Chicago to Cleveland or to St. Louis or something like that, or Cincinnati, you know, I've got 5 hours on the road. And if I have an autonomous driving car, I can get a lot of stuff done over that time. And basically,
I don't need to take the Greyhound. Either, depending
Greyhound
on the cost.
Done,
or
know,
Amtrak.
Maybe Amtrak. Maybe some, you know, airlines get hurt
on the
you know, the long run trips or the short run trips for the airlines. But at the end of the day, when the consumers start demanding these things, you know, that's, you know, in watching markets over the years, you hear the billionaires talk. And one of the very smartest billionaires that I saw said, you know, they don't invest because people or because prices are low or because of, you know, location. That isn't it. Like in real estate, it isn't location. It's timing. And we invest and do something if there's demand. And when there's demand, you can take advantage of things. You can, you know, give that product and then you can have pricing power along the way as you refine it and build it better. So, you know, when there is substantial demand, that's when things are going to change. And when you see that these types of products can come out on reasonable prices and have this sort of thing where you could, you know, I could basically live in Cleveland and commute to Zach's and get work done or, you know, maybe not that far.
Well, that's a little,
a little extreme. I could be there, you know, every
other
weekend.
You could be in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I could easily be in Milwaukee or someplace, you know, deep into Wisconsin.
Right.
And, you know, have a lot of space and enjoy life a little bit differently.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing will drive demand. And, you know, does Charlie or Warren fully grasp that and how quickly things change today as opposed to how they have over the last, you know, 15, 20 years?
Okay. Do you have the ticker for On Deck Capital?
ONDK.
Okay.
Pretty sure it's On Deck.
What about Lending Club?
Lending Club is LC.
Okay. And I had a couple of picks that are kind of in the Buffett strain. These aren't the disruptors necessarily, but a couple that people might be interested in that aren't the big caps if they're going to stay away from those big dividend players. I like Amplify Brands. Their ticker is BETR. They just reported the Nobody likes their report, but they make Skinny Pop popcorn. Everybody knows that brand. It's got. I've even started eating it. It's like the healthy snack food. That's the in thing now.
When you open it, it does smell like you've just you've walked into a movie theater.
I know.
It smells incredible, and you think like they had already popped popcorn. You know,
right. Like, how could
that
be good?
I don't really want that, right? Because that's got to be stale sitting in that bag, and I can just get the microwave stuff, and it's right there, but I burn the microwave stuff. So, I don't know. The popcorn, it's always been a mystery to me, but obviously, you know, it's doing well. I see the one thing that I see about
earnings growth.
Yeah, about BETR is that I see a sequential revenue growth for them throughout the year.
Yeah.
And in terms of aggressive growth, that's something that I always look for. That's my kind of first litmus test. If I see that, there's a good chance that earnings will continue to grow along with sequential revenue growth. So they have it. I've looked at the numbers for the analyst models. And to me, the whole thing looks good. I think the report was okay.
Yeah, me too.
You know, little light on gross margins, but for the most part, it was in line with what the street wanted. But, you know, there's a lot of whispers out there that they were going to beat.
Right.
And I think that's
kind of a lot built in.
Kind of the problem there.
Okay. Another one that I like that's on the financial side, I'm staying away from those big mega cap banks, but I do like the regional banks, and I really like the Bank of the Ozarks. It's in Arkansas. They have about a $3.6 billion market cap. They do pay a dividend, 1.5%. They're kind of staying away from the oil and gas debacle so far. They're, you know, more focused on the Atlanta region and over there, so they didn't get hung up in as many of the bad loans. So they already reported earnings were good again. They haven't missed in 5 years.
That's good. So, small conservative banks. And a shout out to Todd Bunton, who goes to the Ozarks.
That's right. He loves it down there. I always tell him, did you go to the Bank of the Ozarks? And he looks at me like I'm crazy.
vacations in the Ozarks, where I don't think the Bank of the Ozarks serves anything in the Ozarks.
No, it does.
It's in Missouri, isn't it?
No, it's in Arkansas. They're in Arkansas.
See, my geography grades were
no one here
D's
knows anything. Yeah,
I took them to mean doing fine.
Yeah, and another one that I like is Snap-on. Their ticker is SNA, and they've been in business since the 1930s, Wisconsin-based, so Midwest, good Midwest company. They make power tools and like diagnostic tools and all that stuff for the auto industry. So if you own an auto shop and you need to, you know, have any kind of tool to fix the car and all of that,
right?
If they do all that. They do some health and medical tools too, I believe.
Dave Bartosiak, you're probably dreaming
about
buying
this stuff. He would love it. He would love Snap-on. They also haven't missed in 5 years. I like those kind of companies. They have a $9 billion market cap, so they're a little bit bigger than some of these others.
And speaking of 5 years, that's how long Eric Dutram has worked here. Now, I've talked to Dave, Eric, and Jeremy. Yes. I'm just going to throw him in there. And Nina. And Kevin.
What about
so
Cooker?
Now,
yeah.
Kevin, there we go.
Okay.
I've got everybody.
You mentioned everyone who's
everyone
here.
Gets a shout out.
Okay, that's nice. You can read all of these people's articles on Zacks.com. You can also listen to our other podcasts on SoundCloud.com and on iTunes. I guess we had a little bit of snafu on iTunes. We weren't showing up there for some reason or something. That's been fixed. No, don't panic.
Sweet.
We are still
panicking.
On iTunes. We're on the Echo, whatever that one is. I forget. But if you're on the Echo, try to summon us on it. I guess no one's been able to figure it out yet. Like, tune in.
Tune in.
I've been told by Danny here. It's on TuneIn. So try to summon us and send me a tweet if it works. Because I'm not sure what's happening.
See, now I feel like Terry Ruffalo, where people are talking about new technologies. And I'm just going, tune in.
Yeah.
Then tune into our podcast.
I don't think we're on Google Play yet. Are we? Are we on Google Play? I don't think so. We're going to try to get on there.
We're
so
expanding
anyone with
our boundaries.
Android, I have an Android, so I want to listen to myself occasionally. So we'll try to get on Google Play.
Oh boy, Tracy, there—that's a loaded statement right there.
Yes. So we have all these sources. Listen to all our podcasts on there. There's some great information, you know. And our articles are also, as I said, on Zacks.com. So check us out, and we'll see you again next week.